And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. Paul, nice seeing you again. I haven't seen you for a while.
Yeah, it's good to have you back in the studio.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's right. I was gone like 21 out of 30 days or something. That's a long time, right?
Especially for you, who's not generally a traveler in that manner.
That's right. Or any manner.
Yeah. Or well, you're busy, I mean, in Arizona, but just...
Yeah, that was unusual, wasn't it? Because I have all these radio shows and stuff, and that. But it was fun. But it's always nice to see Paul and Kimberly back. This is a show that really, really is important out there today to help people, give hope, inspiration, and there is ways to really help your kids and adults on the spectrum. There's no doubt about it. Kim is here to talk about it. So is Paul. Kim, what's the topic today?
The topic of today is...
Or for today.
It's kind of always the topic of the day when I'm with Paul.
Yeah, that's true.
But, no. Well, today, you know, we were... And actually, let me just preface this. It started, I guess it was last month.
It may have been a month before. I don't know. I came up with a question that I asked Cam. I asked my dad. I asked a bunch of people. That I asked, do you remember what food tastes like? Like, if you think about... I don't know, a hot dog or a strawberry or a milkshake or anything. Can you sort of picture what it tastes like in your mind?
That's right. That was the email. You sent me an email. Now I'm remembering. But yeah, and so and I got that email and I was thinking, well, first of all, I was just fascinated by the question. And then I started thinking about Paul going, I wonder what this means. Does it mean that he's having trouble, you know, being able to recall that experience? And so we ended up talking about it for a while, and we had a very interesting discussion about that particular question. And he and I go out to eat a lot. So, you know, I mean, in the moment, trying to taste things and recall them, it's just such an interesting experience. But to hear Paul's thinking about it was just very insightful and different than I've heard. Not that I talk about this a lot, but it was insightful, and I was thinking that there are probably people out there that either don't think about sensory memory and the experiences they have related to that, but also an insight into how someone with an autism spectrum disorder may be processing information, sensory information.
And just to sort of preface all this is all specifically about how I process things, and it's probably not wise to abstract it too much to think, okay, because I think about things this way, other people on the spectrum think about things this way. I know that I haven't read all of Temple Grandin's work by any stretch, but I read a part of her talking about how she thinks in pictures, and thinking in pictures is probably the last way I would describe how I think. So there's definitely some variance in how this works, but...
But that's a good point, though.
Yeah,
because
just to remember that.
And everybody, I mean, everybody is different. Well, obviously, there's a spectrum and there are commonalities. I think that's a valid point, whether it was you sharing your thoughts or someone else sharing their thoughts. I think the message, and I'm excited to hear this part, is that we need to think outside the box a lot and realize that people are not necessarily thinking the way we're thinking. So that's what I really enjoy.
Yeah, so that's what we're sort of going to be talking about is... The conversation Kim and I had where we worked through how I think about a lot of things that gave some general insight into how people can think and process certain things very differently. And so it started with the food because I don't remember how food tastes. Like, I remember, for example, words sweet, salty, sour, but I can't really picture what sweet is in my head. So when I have a food I've had before, it tastes familiar. I recognize that it's familiar, but that's about it. It's almost like having it for the first time again. So for me, eating the same food, you know, two or three times a week or month after month, I don't really get bored with it very quickly or at all just because it's almost a new experience each time.
Let me ask you this. When you go to your favorite restaurant, how do you select something
on the
menu?
I asked him the same thing. I know.
And I remember that I liked it a lot. Like, I can remember that I liked it a lot, but I don't remember what it tastes like. Every now and then I'll have a craving for a specific food, and I'm not really sure why because I have a hard time associating that with a flavor or anything, but not often. And it really is. It's a case of, like, you know, I remember more a description of the food than the actual taste. I remember it as sort of a bunch of adjectives in my mind.
Can you smell the food?
No. Well, I mean, no. I can smell it when it's there, but I can't imagine the sound.
Recalling the sensory experience of it is what, and that was so interesting. And when we were talking, And I was asking the same thing. Well, then how do you decide what to order? And why do you order the same things over and over? But he's organized it differently than I've organized it. Or I don't know. Actually, what about you? How do you, when you taste food, like if I were to say, okay, you know, picture I'm going to put a hot fudge sundae in front of you. Like, well, what are you experiencing?
Well, it's interesting. Let me say one thing before I answer that. Is that, oh no, you're going to both laugh at this, but yes, NLP. they do. This is right up my alley because processing could be, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and as well as smell and taste. And there's a strategy. There's a sequence of maybe one or two or three of those processing mechanisms, whether it's visual, auditory, kinesthetic, taste, or smell. And when I select, I usually select food based on the taste, not the visual, auditory, or kinesthetic, or maybe even the smell.
And see, when I'm hungry, my thought process generally goes, okay, I'm hungry. How hungry am I? Okay, I'm pretty hungry, so I want something filling. How am I feeling today? Do I want something light or do I want something heavy? I break it down into all these categories of what kind of food. Do I want something sweet? Do I want something spicy? You know, what do I want something like this or that? So I come up with a general list of what kind of properties the meal I want has to have.
Like a
query system,
basically.
And then I start going, okay, so I want something that meets all these requirements. Restaurants that have these might be IHOP and Chick-fil-A. Okay, so Chick-fil-A is nearer. I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A today. Or, you know, so for me, I know a lot of people, it's like they start with a restaurant or start with a couple of restaurants. I start with what kind of food, then a restaurant, then I pick something on their menu that meets those requirements.
And the requirements, then, if you want something light or heavy, might be kinesthetic then? You choose on a kinesthetic basis? Which is a feeling?
Yeah, it's
interesting.
It's,
I like
I don't
that.
Know.
Wait,
yeah,
how did you just get to that?
Feeling.
Oh my gosh, we talked about this for hours. We didn't get to that point. Ooh.
Oh, give me some knuckles. I know
right,
what I'm doing.
Knuckles.
But no, that it
well,
sounds
that's
like a kinesthetic.
Because that's an element of some. Yeah, we'll come back to that. But yeah, but it was interesting though. I mean, yes, that's the thing though. Is what's interesting to me about this? It's the thinking, but it's also what that thinking represents and how it influences other areas of a person's life. You know, somebody that may have trouble recalling a feeling may also have trouble in other areas of their life. So you think, well, what does taste have to do with, other areas? But it's something in the brain that might be related. So it just fascinated me that, you know, that was the process. My process is so different because I almost like have a salivating response. If you say hot fudge sundae.
Yeah.
I mean, but everyone's different.
I can
different.
Feel the cold.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The
I mean, I'm just like watering thinking, oh, yum. So, I mean, that's my first response. There's no query system. There's no. Actually, if there is one, it comes later. Like I might say, oh, well, I haven't eaten healthy food. Maybe I should wait. Or where would I get that? You know, but it's an after effect, not the first thing that comes
like
to
Kim
mind.
Was commenting earlier that she never sees me have sweets. And I also don't often have desserts. And that's a large part usually because I pick a meal based on how hungry I am, so the meal fills me up. And I'm not craving that dessert. I pick the meal to meet, you know, whatever requirements I had in my head. There's nothing left for dessert. If I want something sweet, often I'll just have something sweet. I'll go somewhere for a dessert. I'll go to a fondue place and get chocolate fondue or
so
whatever.
So wait a minute. What about the candy bar today?
I was hungry.
Still.
I was at Target.
Well, it's funny because some things I've memorized, Paul. Something that's out of the ordinary, I'm always like, are you okay? What's different? But okay.
Anyway. Well, like I told you, I do really like that brand and type of chocolate.
Right.
And so it was in front of me, and I was hungry, and I was like, anything will do at this moment. And then I decided to just go ahead and go to the restaurant and start eating without you.
Yeah, and
well,
that was okay.
Let me ask you this. You say you don't usually recall taste, what something tastes like, right, Paul?
Yeah.
Now, at what point... Let's go take you back to, maybe a couple hours ago you had lunch, perhaps?
Yeah.
And you tasted it at the time you're eating it. How long does it take for you to forget?
I would say that it's pretty much just in short-term memory. So it's gone pretty quickly. Like, I could loosely describe lunch, but I definitely couldn't tell you if The sandwich had bacon on it. I couldn't tell if the bacon was saltier or normal.
Oh.
You know,
I was watching.
No, I couldn't tell.
No, I know. I'm just kidding.
How it compared to previous times I'd had that sandwich. I don't have a qualitative perspective because I can't remember what it actually tasted like. I remember that it was a chicken sandwich. Nothing stood out. But I can't sort of picture it to the point where I could compare it to previous chicken sandwiches or other chicken sandwiches.
Have you ever had lemon?
Yes.
Okay. Now, if you hold out your what are you right or left-handed?
Lefty.
You're left. Okay. And so if you had a lemon in your hand,
yes,
and you put it down and you gently cut it in half and you picked up half the lemon and brought it to your lips, and you started to squeeze it a little bit, so some lemon juice now starts to go in your mouth. What happens?
Well, I know that it's very sour.
See, yeah, it's what he knows.
But how do you know that, though?
Well,
because
when I had it, I thought, this is sour.
But what?
I remember the word.
He categorized it by the word.
I categorize it.
Okay.
Not
so
feeling.
I can't picture that.
So
sourness.
You didn't salivate or anything as I described.
Not
it.
Really. No.
Oh, that's so interesting.
I know. This
I
is what we've have our.
It's not a wrong right. It's just how people process. Yeah. I find this is very cool.
Well, it's interesting because we went from taste to smell, as you did, but we also in our discussions we also went to sight, touch, and sound,
and that was
and talked about those. And I imagine we're pretty close to a commercial break now. But after that, we'll talk a little bit about how I experienced those as well, because those are sort of different than normal as well. Well,
very
not necessarily
cool.
different than but normal,
similar
but
similar to
but,
how you categorize it.
But they're,
it, though.
Yeah, they're very
it's
similar.
It's in
to
a different file system.
That my general sensory processing is very. I don't know, methodical and word based.
It's just a different categorization. The way he's categorized
it. I gotcha.
Yeah. Mind. Yeah.
Nice.
But it's very, and seriously, we spend a lot. In fact, one of our experiment, our upcoming experience that we need to do is I was thinking about sort of doing a timing thing where it's like we taste it and how long exactly, when does it dissipate? We'll get to that.
Wow.
Probably key lime pie.
I think,
your fave.
Honestly, if we were to do it experimentally, what we'd have to have is like, I don't know, 5 or 6 drinks of different sweetness. And then I'd try one.
Like degrees of sweetness?
Degrees of sweetness. And try one and try another and say, is it sweeter or less sweet? Then try a different one 10 minutes later. Is it sweeter? You know, over time, try to figure out how they compare to see what the point is where I lose the ability to compare them.
Interesting.
Oh, nice.
I think that's the only way I would design an experiment that has some sort of qualitative. It needs to have a qualitative element to go along with the temporal element to see, you know, when I lose the ability to compare.
Right. And actually, I have a question that I'll bring up after our break. So I guess, okay. So here we are. The inner workings of Paul. It's very interesting. If you want to call in with a question for Paul, you can at 602-296-3632.
Or text me at 832-278-1441.
And we'll be right back with more Understanding Autism.
And now, one of my favorite attorneys, Joe Collins, you have a great firm, a family atmosphere with great sophistication.
That's my dad's kind of theory when we started. He always kind of touts himself as the old country lawyer. We pride ourselves at having somebody answer the phone. You don't have a computer system answering it. We try to give personal service.
Tell us a little bit about the firm in terms of where you focus your attention.
We probably do 60-70% family law, and we really enjoy it. Family law encompasses such a wide variety of topics. But, you know, for the most part, you feel rewarded that you're helping somebody out. Family law is probably the most rewarding.
Why don't we give your website out?
It's real simple, collinslaw.net. The email's just the same, joecollins@collinslaw.net.
602-788-7227. Call Joe Collins and Collins. Great family law attorneys and more.
Your body is the greatest gift that you will ever be given. How well are you taking care of yours? Hey everyone, this is Journey Reeves, owner of Mind Body Unlimited. More important than time or money, your health is the secret to a truly wealthy life. We can customize an exercise and diet program that greatly enhances your quality of life. If you are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, give us a buzz at 480-370-7768. That's 480-370-7768 to schedule your free, no-obligation consultation today.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism. Welcome back to Understanding Autism. I am Kim Isaac. I'm one of the co-hosts of this show. And here with me is Paul Loudon, my co-host from Houston, Texas, and Dave Isaac.
No, Big Daddy Dave.
Right,
isn't
Big
that
Daddy
what we
Dave.
Call? Is that the term?
All right, we'll go with it. Big Daddy Dave. And just before the break, we were talking about the way that people process sensory information. Specifically, Paul was sharing with us the way that he re-experiences tastes, specifically, is what we were talking about. But just before the break, we were talking about, you also categorize other types of sensory information.
Well, you said you had one more question to ask about taste, I think. Right,
well, I did, and I said it during the break, but I'll say it for the listeners too. What I was curious about is if you were to integrate when Big Daddy Dave was leading you in an NLP exercise, and I know you were following him through sort of a listening
hand motions,
Yeah. If you actually did the motions, if that would trigger something differently in a pretend fashion.
And it really doesn't, because to me the motions are a completely separate thing than the taste. Like the taste of food is one thing, the action of chewing the food is another, the texture is another, that everything sort of gets categorized as it's happening. And my mind goes, is this a new taste? If so, how would I describe it? Is this a new texture? If so, how would I describe it? Like, there's a very conscious process that happens when I eat food or when I do something in terms of whether I'm going to remember it and what I'm going to remember about it.
What if I said, instead of pretending, here, hold out your hand, instead of pretending a lemon, is there a half of a lemon and oozing with juice, and it's really a lemon as you put it to your face. So try that. It's really a lemon, and you could start to smell the lemon smell, because it's really a lemon right now.
I can't imagine a lemon smell.
Okay. So as you take a bite into the non-pretend lemon.
Ew, what, see, I'm a making bite, a face just thinking about
what
it.
What happens? Any salivation? No. Okay, so it has, so, okay.
And we're going to get into the other sensory stuff. I have a hard time picturing the lemon. So,
and that was
let me ask you something. Picture an apple.
Yes.
What color is it?
Red.
Immediately you answer red.
Yeah.
Because you pictured a specific apple.
Yes.
I wouldn't picture a specific apple. So, I would picture the idea of an apple. What is an apple?
Oh, abstract.
He actually constructs it.
I think in abstracts.
What would it look like, the apple?
I start thinking, well, which apple would I be describing to you? I mean, like,
oh, I gotcha. No, that's
as
a good
as
answer.
Said, what would it look like? I'd be like,
you'd say,
well,
which type?
Apple? Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
My first thought was which apple? You know, is
very
it one
good.
Of those Fuji apples that's red and green mixed, or is it a glossy red like
but
apple?
But it's
or,
not a reaction.
So it's hard. You know, so you're saying you don't code in generalizations?
I don't. I do code in generalizations.
Well,
big abstracts.
Right.
You know, like.
Oh.
You know, I don't code in specifics.
In specifics.
Like, I mean, there's the concept of,
gotcha.
Of the Platonic ideal. That is, okay, if I say tree, you have a picture of a tree. But if you see an oak tree, a pine tree, or a new type of tree you've never seen before, you'll recognize that new type of tree as a tree, even though you've never seen it before.
Yeah.
Because there are patterns to what make a tree. We have this idea of a perfect tree that every other tree is sort of a projection of. you know, that you know, a triangle. There's a whole bunch of triangles, but there's a commonality to them that makes them all triangles. Chairs, the commonality is that we sit on them, you know, whatever. But, you know, there's a huge variety of different chairs. But if you walk into somewhere with weird new chairs, you'll still generally recognize them as chairs.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
And I think in those sort of abstracts, you know, what does it mean to be a chair? Rather than if I said, you know, picture a chair, some people will picture a specific chair. I'll think of the idea of chairness. And so,
okay.
You know, for visual, I have a hard time, if I'm trying to remember a person's face, I start trying to construct it. I think, okay, his hair is brown. Do I remember having a large or small face?
We went through this. I said, okay, if you could close your eyes and picture me, someone he sees, and he had to actually construct me.
I see.
Versus flash me. Is that
Yeah, no, I can't close my eyes and picture someone. If I close my eyes, I immediately lose what both of you look like. And then I have to sort of reconstruct it. I mean, it's a very specific thing that for encoding things, almost any sort of sensory thing, it's a series of smaller parts and abstracts.
So that there's some challenges with that.
Yeah.
And is there opportunities too?
I think that it – I would say yes just because
– creativity.
I don't know if I would include creativity, but I think it helps in problem solving because you think of everything as parts.
And you're not boxed in.
You're not boxed in, exactly.
I like,
yes. Like you aren't thinking of the world in specifics. So when you see a new example of X, you're aware that it's part of this broader category, which is a part of a broader – like everything is automatically part of categories and areas. And so you're not boxed in with, well, I don't know what an X is anymore, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that was our big I know, I was just fascinated.
Because, I mean, it also, like with music, I can't really remember a song, but I can remember specific parts. I can remember the lyrics. I can remember the guitar track. I can remember the drum track. Like, I can pick out specific parts of the song, and sort of, if I hum them, I can bring them back. But I can't close my eyes and just hear the whole song.
Right. And so, I know for me, you know, I can actually replay and re-experience things how I did, you know, how I experienced them in the moment, whether it's the Hot Fudge Sundae or the song, I could hear it, I could replay it for myself.
So you may not, then some of the blessings here and the opportunities and some of the positive of this strategy is that traumatic events won't loop around.
A lot of them now, especially now that I'm more conscious of what I'm doing, they don't.
But that's sort of cool, isn't it? A lot of people play a movie over and over on the same event that they didn't think is...
Like self-imposed negative patterns.
Yeah,
or,
and they'll loop it, and they'll keep looping it until they don't know how to break it. But it sounds like then you don't have that strategy, so you won't be looping negatives.
Yeah, there's that, but it's also... I have a hard time looping positives as well. People,
I was going to say,
people can look inside and find something that makes them smile, find, you know, remember some good thing that happened and use that as a source of positive energy.
Right.
I have a very hard
and
time with that,
and
too.
I was just going to say, people that have difficulty with motivation, like intrinsic motivation or follow through, it would be very difficult if you're not able to re-experience, you know, those kinds of things to, as a propelling mechanism.
Right.
And so... Yes, there are a lot of, you know, strengths involved with that kind of thinking. But I think it can also be tricky for some other areas as well.
But great introspection on your part, Paul, to know that, this is how you code things and characterize things.
Well, I mean, it all just started with me. I had hot dogs for, I don't know, 3 or 4 days in a row as one of my meals each day. And I realized, you know what? Every time I have hot dogs, they seem new to me. Like, I'm surprised. There's a little bit of surprise every time I bite into a hot dog. I'm like, I don't remember ketchup tasting this tangy. I don't remember mustard tasting like it just it catches me a little bit by surprise every time I start eating them. I was like, I don't really remember what food tastes like. Like, I'd always thought that I did because I'd never really examined it. Because I could say, well, a hot dog, you know, the mustard is tangy and a little bit salty. The ketchup is saltier but less tangy and... But then I would start going, and I don't really remember it. I just have words.
Yeah.
But I had always thought before that I did remember it.
But you categorize the words with the particular foods. That's how you knew it was tangy.
Yeah.
So
you
it's more of a knowing versus an experiencing, actually is really, I mean, it's related to
I gather a lot of knowledge about things I've done, but I don't gather a lot of experiences. I don't carry all the experiences with me.
And that's a big, that's one of, related to one of the core deficits of autism is processing information in a multi-channel fashion where it's integrated. Versus single packets of, okay, I'm processing gestures, I'm processing words, in separate fashions. Or like you said, the chewing, the tasting, all of that stuff. Storing it, in more of a single channel fashion versus an integrated fashion.
Now, does this happen in every context in life, do you think?
For me, everyone I've examined so far.
And we examined
Have you examined?
I think we've covered a lot.
Well, I was going to ask. I did meet your lovely girlfriend. About in that sense?
Like physical?
Hugging or something.
Maybe. Yeah, I would say that I can't remember what it feels like to hug her other than I know that I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because he's labeled it that. But that's because he's labeled
curious
it as such.
If it was a different context, might it be different? All right, nicely done.
And that's one of the things is like, let's take, for example, missing people. I generally don't really miss people. Like when I've not talked with a friend of mine that I only talk to on the internet for 2 or 3 months because they've been busy, I may be aware that they're gone. But when they come back, for me, it's almost like they weren't gone. It's just start back up where we left off because I don't really have that same context, that idea of, they should be here, they aren't here, that feeling of someone missing from my day-to-day interactions in the same way.
So during the time they're gone, you're not really missing them.
Yeah.
Because you're not categorizing it that way.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good. It's all strategies. I mean, NLP, I said it again, but it every map works according to the map. And so it's not right or wrong. It's just mapping.
And I think when it comes to autism spectrum disorders, a lot of times what happens is if certain areas of the brain aren't connecting in what people would say a typical way, other parts of the brain sort of step up, I guess you could say, and reorganize things. So I'm always fascinated with there's a unique categorization system that I hear about from Paul, and it's just fascinating to me that first of all the brain can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Reorganize itself, if it needed to, and that there's a system that works for him and that has a unique perspective.
Is it something that you have any opinion about or any passion about whether you'd like to remember taste?
I'm curious, and curiosity is one of my biggest driving forces. I would like to know what it means to remember taste. I would like to know, what that experience is like. I can't decide whether I want to be able to or not until I've done it at least once and compare it to my old system. So
makes sense, actually. Doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think a lot of there's a lot of listeners out there maybe that if you can relate to this, maybe you're a person on the spectrum and you can relate to this, you might find yourself needing more of an external trigger to either start moving on something or follow through with something, or an external trigger, or even just an in-the-moment trigger for you to re-experience something. I think that this kind of thing may be something you're experiencing or similarly in that fashion.
It's a good point.
It's a good opportunity for people to sort of start thinking about their own experience. So now everybody listening has a task to go, taste some food and start asking yourself the questions, and
how do I process this?
And an hour or two later, see, can I recall that? Can I re-experience that? It's a really different thing than just knowing. Knowing versus experiencing is really different.
And some people re-experience something in their past and put it into their present, and all it is they're reliving their past, and if it's negative, what happens to their life? It's
can
a
be
sad.
Held back.
It's
or
very sad
stuck.
Because there's a lot of people like that, and that's really unfortunate.
In those cases, though, people generally, I would say, have a choice. I know there's people that ultimately.
But what if it's opposite? What if that's all
That's all their brains have ever encoded?
Yeah.
Well, then I guess that would be different. It just depends on your life experience.
Well, I mean,
really.
There are those people that I'd say you would describe as very emotional.
Yeah.
And I tend to think that they are just – they call autism a spectrum, but I think it's a general spectrum, that they're just on the far side of it. There's the hump, the one standard deviation where most people are, and then there's the far side where people are very much under the sway of their emotional memories and their emotional responses. And I think you end up with people like that where emotional memories, when they remember something happens, they can't look at it. I would call it objectively, but it's not really objectively.
I know, because I'm more like that. But, I'm definitely no. – I'm on the highly sensitive person spectrum.
But you're not to the point where it could cause – I mean, you're at the point where I know it's caused you some anxiety and stuff, but, like, you're not at the point where it's severely overwhelming, where it caused you to be unable to live everyday life.
Yeah, that would be a good point.
You aren't the parallel to autism, but there is a parallel to autism where the emotional side of stuff causes people to be unable to live an everyday life, and where they encode everything as a series of emotional responses and sensory responses to it and can't really look at the factual what actually happened part. Like, they can't separate that.
I know someone who encodes that way.
You do? And is that maybe being totally associated?
I don't know what you're asking exactly.
Associated would be someone that's just stuck in it as if they're in the movie versus watching themselves in the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think so.
Disassociated versus associated.
Yeah.
And it's time for a break, Ms. Kim.
It is time for a break. We love callers, actually. We love callers. Please call us 602-296-3632.
Or text us at 832-278-1441.
And we'll be right back with more Understanding Autism.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Your body is the greatest gift that you will ever be given. How well are you taking care of yours? Hey everyone, this is Journey Reeves, owner of Mind Body Unlimited. More important than time or money, your health is the secret to a truly wealthy life. We can customize an exercise and diet program that greatly enhances your quality of life. If you are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, give us a buzz at 480-370-7768. That's 480-370-7768 to schedule your free, no-obligation consultation today.
At Beerham Baum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum & Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hirschberger Assisted Living Home for the Elderly, whether it's a need to recuperate after surgery or just need daily assistance to enrich their life, you can trust that your loved one is being well cared for. Our caregivers are fully licensed by the Arizona Department of Health. An experienced team of professionals provide expert medical care, including physical, occupational, and recreational therapy, wound care, medication management, nutritional support, and personal care. All faiths are welcome. Hirschberger Assisted Living Home, founded in 1997, will provide your loved ones a quality of life with loving care. Call Shirley Hirschberger today at 602-314-6937. That's 602-314-6937, or visit the website ahomewithshirley.com. Hirschberger Assisted Living, home is where the heart is.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches, 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism. Welcome back to Understanding Autism. I'm Kim Isaac, and I'm here with Paul Loudon and Big Daddy Dave. There, I said it. Although, okay, I'm not even going to go there. Anyway, we were discussing today, you know, thinking about thinking in terms of more of a sensory memory type thing. And Paul's been sharing with us his process that he goes through when he experiences sensory input. And so one thing I just wanted to say, and then I know you have some points that you want to make, is when you were explaining about the hot dogs and how you had been having hot dogs lately, and you had that element of surprise, whatever degree it was. And some of my clients actually that I work with, you can actually see the surprise element in them physically, like entering, you know, what maybe we wouldn't consider a new situation, but seeing whether it's going to a different mall or maybe a different IHOP. Like, you've been to one IHOP, you go to another. Some of the people that I work with actually have an element of surprise to the same but different, you know, component. And so hearing you describe your experience is actually, you know, it helps me relate some of the other things that I see. And maybe some of you listening have experiences that you can relate to on some level in that regard.
And that's true. It's like every time I sit down on my couch, I'm surprised by how comfortable it is. And it's a positive surprise, you know, that I know that it's comfortable, but I'm surprised by the amount that I'm not good at recording a qualitative scale to go with the word. And so one thing that I wanted to talk about was the kind of problems I've had dealing with people because of this different way I've encoded things. And one of the biggest ones is that, you know, that sensory things, one thing that emotion is sensory. I mean, emotion is, in its entirety, a sensory experience. And for me, it passes, and I don't remember it. That I remember that I was angry, but I have a hard time going back into that angry and being angry about it again. If I remember the details of the event, it might make me angry now. Like, if I'm, like, you know, upset about something that happened and it's something that's ongoing, when I think about it again, it might make me angry again. But if it's something that's completely past, I can't really go back into it and become angry again. If it was a good time at the beach, I can't go back into it and become happy again. And so I have a hard time putting as much value on other people's emotions as they do. Because for them, if something makes them angry or frustrated, it's something that stays with them for a while, that when they remember it, they'll remember that frustration and get frustrated again. If I was frustrated last week because I couldn't get a video game to work, and I'm not playing it now, I don't care. Not in the slightest, but they might be frustrated. They might hold on to that frustration, be angry with the developers of the video game, the company that sold it to them. Like, they might associate it with other stuff. And so when I'm dealing with someone, if I say something that makes someone upset or something that makes someone happy, I have to spend a little extra time thinking about how is this going to affect things going onward, because it wouldn't affect me and it would affect them, and I have to sort of figure out what the meaning of that effect is going to be.
It's a lot of active mental work is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So there's this element of emotion and sensory things where when you're dealing with people who process them in a different way, a different enough way than you, you have to sort of keep a conscious part of yourself going, how is their processing different than mine? And what does this mean to me in this interaction?
And some things that you may think are just maybe take for granted or just make assumptions on, the people that you're working with, or if you yourself are on the spectrum, you know, it's very entirely possible that you are processing, or the person is processing something in a way that you couldn't have imagined, you know, and sometimes that's misread as defiance or, you know, someone doesn't care or lazy. I mean, that's where a lot of the misunderstandings come into play interactively, is when we're processing one way, we're assuming, I mean, something like taste. I mean, Paul and I go out to eat all the time, and never would I just, I mean, I just assume we're processing things the same, and later it was like, oh, that was good, you know, to me, but I, it never occurred to me that we were encoding things differently and categorizing things differently.
And what I noticed just now, and Kim, I don't know if you noticed it, and Paul, I don't know if you noticed it, but when you talked about when you put things in the past, like the game, you know, like some type of electronic video game, and if mm-hmm. it didn't work, you put it in the past, and you don't recreate the anger. I don't know if you noticed where you coded that, because you clearly pointed to it.
Did I?
To the left. Your left.
My left.
Which is the past. And one thing I'm sort of curious about, that's a common timeline in NLP, mm-hmm. left, past. And there's not a right or wrong, but people yeah. have left, past, to the right, future. Sometimes right in front of them is the future, line going through them, the past. And if you can't see something in the past, you might not be able to recall it. So I'm sort of just curious, something we could talk about, certainly not, we don't have enough time on this show, but how that might affect a recall situation, how you code it from a timeline perspective.
You mean actually using your body, though, to help yourself encode?
Well encoding memory,
you could change your
more
timeline.
Present than past when yeah. something is still
are
relevant.
Are there NLP techniques
yes,
to do this?
Yes, there is.
And we will be talking after the show. yes, we will.
It's fascinating. I learned that, in several of my trainings, and it was just fascinating where, I'll give you an example. I did some NLP coaching quite a few years ago with this lady who could not see, could not get her goals. She could never accomplish her goals. And I asked, where do you see? So we did a technique to see how she coded her timeline. And she had her future. You don't have the past in front of you, but she had her past right up here and the future in front of her or behind her past in front of her. And usually the past.
So she had to get past her past.
Yeah, exactly.
Before she could move forward.
I told her to stand up and walk past it, and she had a real shocked look, like, oh, now I see my future.
Wow.
And it was that simple, actually. I mean, you have to do some other things,
that's
too.
That's interesting.
But
yeah.
It's how you code time sometimes might have something here. I'm not sure, but it is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and another thing that I sort of wanted to touch on here was the relevance of all this to motivation, because that's another big one. And to me, at least, motivation is a very emotional experience. While I'm doing something that I enjoy, I'm motivated about it. But I can't recall that motivation. When I've stopped doing it, when I take a break or whatever, I can't go back into that and regain it. I only have it while I'm doing it. And it's very much like those other things where I can remember that I was motivated, I can remember that I liked it, but there's no amount that I don't have. I can't remember that this was very important to me. I have a word, this is important to me, but I don't have a feeling of importance. Mm-hmm. And so it's very hard to tap into any sort of emotional drive for the motivation because, again, it's something that I'm not encoding, I'm not storing in a way that serves as a driving force.
And go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you store things like that and you categorize them sort of objectively with criteria, think back to a time where you might have coded one of those things that you like to do, but you couldn't recall the feeling. Is there ever something else that you like to do, but you coded it and it looks bigger?
Like
it may be how you, like if you put something in a file cabinet,
mm-hmm.
and something you like to do, but not greatly like to do, but you put it in, but you know you sort of like to do it. But then something you really like to do, you put it in the file cabinet, but it's sort of bigger and brighter.
Like there's thicker file?
Yeah.
There's not really that
nothing
kind of
like
thing
that?
Associated
okay.
with it. They're just there.
They're just there.
They're
equally.
Just there. Yeah, I guess. I mean, like,
okay.
every piece of data is a piece of data.
Okay,
and
gotcha.
And then, so, like, I may go back to playing video games, and there may come up the idea, well, I really enjoy playing most video games or whatever, but it's the same size. There's just a really in front of the enjoy as opposed to just enjoy on something. You know, there's just some extra words there.
Is there one video game you like more than another?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, how would you know that? How do you determine that?
I know the answer to that, but you do it. I know you so well. Go ahead.
What is the answer?
I'm curious what her answer is, but I would just say
how
that,
would you
that,
know? Yeah, how could you tell?
First off, anytime someone asks me what my favorite video game ever is, I can't tell them because I can't categorize it that finely grained. But there are video games that while I'm playing them, I think this is I don't have complaints about this game. And then there's games where I have a few small complaints. And that, so it's the quantity of problems I've found with a game or the quantity of positive points.
But
so it's a quantity
But
thing.
What he remembers is the label he gave it.
It's all objective criteria.
That's the thing.
And so that's utter cool. I like it.
Very, very interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. My friends have come to the point where I'll tell them about a game and they'll say, I noticed you didn't say anything wrong about it. It must be an incredible game.
So they know your criteria.
They know the way that I process this stuff. And they understand that if I have complaints about a game, it doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that these are things that I saw that were problems, and they'll ask me, so how bad were these complaints?
And that's how you sort.
I sort by how many good things, how many bad things, you know, and you know, whether I've said this is a major bad thing or a minor bad thing.
And I just think it's fascinating. I mean, Paul obviously has a gift of articulation for this and a self-awareness. And I know there are a lot of people out there that may be processing the same way but can't articulate it or aren't even aware of it. And I think that self-awareness is such a critical component to being able to move forward and grow as a person.
Yeah, I think it would be impossible to really make use of this without being aware that I was doing it first. That's what I'd understand is that, you know, this person didn't like the game, but when I ask them why, they can't tell me. I don't understand because when someone asks me why, I can tell them exactly what's wrong with it. And they just say, well, I didn't enjoy it. Theirs is an emotional association with the game, something that I can't relate to at all.
Yeah, specific criteria.
Yeah.
I think that's very cool.
And somehow he and I just, we get along. We couldn't be more opposite. And I'm like all emotional and he's, but we manage. No, we're good.
Very good. This is very valuable for
the
listeners.
There have been times where we've conflicted about that kind of thing.
Well,
there
that is true. I wasn't going to bring that up.
I mean, I'm just going to say, like, there were times where she was upset with a group. I'm not going to name the group. They had done something.
See, I'm having a reaction right now.
There.
For those of you who aren't here, I remember this very well, and it brings up very negative feelings.
Yeah, and I couldn't understand why she was having the degree of reaction she was. And when I was asking about her about it, she was getting more upset, and I had a hard time understanding why she was getting more upset when she didn't even seem to really understand her own response to it from my perspective. Like, from my perspective, she didn't understand why she was upset. So why would she be upset?
Right.
Well, the other element to that, okay, I'm not going to go in there. But we were actually side by side in that moment, and I've always wondered if we were face to face, if it would have been different.
I don't know.
Because of the reading. I mean, now I think we understand each other, but aside from that, there was other things that day.
And so that's just sort of an example of one of those situations. I couldn't understand where she was coming from. My attempt to understand it seemed to her that I was pressuring her about it because she didn't have the answers I was looking for.
Well, I felt disrespected, but I know that wasn't your intent.
That wasn't my intent.
I know you
my intent was
to
understand what she was doing. But in a normal day-to-day situation, that can very easily get out of hand because neither side understands the reason the other side is being the way they are. And so they're associating their own reasons with it, and it just gets lost.
This is a fabulous
potential.
And
the good news is I got pulled over that day in that moment, so it stopped the fight. We won't go there. That was the whole. But we remember. Yeah,
this understanding is critical just for general communication.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Understanding how you think and how you process situations and how you remember situations can, I think, help you greatly in dealing with other people, but especially when dealing with the spectrum, taking the time, if you're working with someone on the spectrum, to talk with them about how they think about things and what they remember about things. Like, just ask them, what do you remember about X, and see what words they use. You know, whether they say it made me happy or whether they say, you know, something else, or, you know, do they use a lot of adjectives that made me really happy, or do they just say, you know, it made me happy for a long time? Do they remember the time as the important thing? What parts do they focus on can help you build sort of an idea of what thought processes they're living in.
And for parents and teachers and caregivers,
anyone,
they have to understand that they're not the center of the universe. Their way is not the way of other people. And if they understood that, there could be a nice bridging of the gap of miscommunication. Am I right?
Well, we all go day to day with assumptions. I mean, I make assumptions about people around me all the time that, you know, if I knew what they were, I wouldn't be making them, but I don't know what they are. And, you know, the important thing is to start paying attention to what might be an assumption. And how we think is something that it's easy to make an assumption about because it's something that we just do. None of us came up with our thought process. Well, eventually, when you start thinking about how you think, you start improving it.
Yeah.
But until you start doing that thinking about thinking, your thought process is just what developed naturally.
And
so it's very easy to assume other people do it the same way.
And as a therapist, I think one of the rules I follow, and especially for somebody who maybe, you know, somebody like Paul who, you know, we interact and sometimes it's very difficult to understand where a difficulty is gaining, I always look at it as gaining information. And I feel like that's kind of been the theme of, you know, most everything, you know, he and I do and some other people that I work with. But bringing to the forefront the understanding without judging it. I mean, it's not like, well, you have to do things my way, but it's like, let's just be aware of what, how you're doing things, how I'm doing things. And as we share, we can both learn about each other.
And just another thing, you talked about, was it strategies?
Mm-hmm.
Is that an important thing to remember as well is that if someone is competent in an area, that there are multiple paths to competence. That, you know, I get by in a lot of day-to-day life just fine, but I, as we've demonstrated, I'm doing a lot of things mentally very different than, you know, either of you might be. So remember that there are multiple paths to competence, and that just because someone is able to do something, that you've set a goal of, you know, putting on your clothes yourself or going to school without problems, just because they're able to do it doesn't mean that they're still doing it the same way you would be doing it internally.
That's a really good point.
That all the external appearances can be exactly the same as the person next to them, but the internal processes can be so very different that you could run into some dramatic problem if you don't make yourself aware of what's going on inside as well.
And I think that I think that's, you know, definitely valid. And I think people who might be considered, you know, quote, high functioning, I don't really like that term, but it's the best I can use, is that's where I think there's a lot of confusion and where relational difficulties, you know, might occur, you know, because appearances would say, you know, in my mind, if I see that, to me, that means this. And so I think it's important. That's a really good point for people to remember. Well, I feel like we're going to have to do a part two to this show, but we have about a minute left. And actually, I do want to add, just a couple of quick announcements. That the annual Autism Zoo Walk at the Phoenix Zoo is coming up October 6th. And for more information, you can go to the Autism Society of America Greater Phoenix Chapter website, which is www.phxautism.org. And you can find more information about the Zoo Walk as well as some of the other resources that they have. And we are excited tomorrow. We're going to have Mark McCluskey here on the show to talk about his life experience with autism and also some of the current things that he's up to at the moment. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with more Understanding Autism.